Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
Welcome to another episode of the Shape of Work podcast. On the episode today, we have Catherine Matisky joining us from Australia. Catherine is the Managing Director and CEO of The Performance Company. Catherine, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Before we get into some themes that I want to discuss with you, and I'm sure listeners will derive a lot of value out of, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your journey and what is it that you do at The Performance Company.
So I started the performance company nearly 30 years ago and in Sydney in Australia, and I'm currently in Melbourne in Australia. And when I started, I had no business plan, no clue, no idea. And I just wanted some contract work between one job and the next. And so here I am nearly 30 years later, and I never did get that other job. So I've built the business up over the 30 years to be just me, from being just me where I was doing computer training in the early days, just really on a daily rate to get my rent paid and food on the table and stuff like that, through to the organisation is now global and we've got people all over the world, and it's fantastic. It's been a great ride.
Fantastic. I saw on your LinkedIn and, of course, on your blog, you have something called the ID9 Intelligent Design System. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Catherine?
That really grew out of people saying to me when I was training, in the early days when I was doing computer training, how do you get the results that you get? And I had really no idea. I just stood up there and I was training the very first versions of Microsoft Word and Excel and PowerPoint. And people used to walk past my training room and go to reception of where I was training and say, can I switch to her course? Because they used to go through past my classrooms and I had flip charts on the walls and my people were working together in groups and so on and so forth. And one day someone came up to me and said, you're not a real trainer.
Oh, wow.
And I just about fell through the floor. Like, I just about to hide because I thought, oh, my goodness, what have they discovered, that I'm some sort of imposter? I'm not a computer expert, you know. And I just, so all I could think of doing was just saying, why do you say that? Which was a great question because I really just wanted to run. And so she said to me, she said, I'm the head of training for a big company in Australia. And she said, how do you do what you do? And I want you to teach my trainers how to do what you do. And I thought, oh, how do I do what I do? Because I didn't really know. And so then I started teaching trainers how to train, and then people gave me their content, including this original woman, to say, you go and write a course on this or that or whatever. And I had to work out a process, and there was no process, and there's still no process. You know, it's ridiculous. Here we are all these years later, and there's little bits of processes for creating learning, but really not anything end to end. And that was the beginning of ID9. And so now, fast forward years and years, ID9 Intelligent Design takes the learning from the original request that the business has, or maybe the L&D team or the HR team notice that there's a gap in knowledge in the organisation, that very starting point, through the whole performance analysis piece into the instructional design where you design the training, deliver it then, and then look at the results. And it's the only end-to-end process in the world. And so we certify trainers in it, and we have an ID9 custom design team where people still give us their content and say, can you turn this into training for my trainers or my subject matter experts to train? So, and we do that all over the world. And so people who are really serious about their instructional design career or L&D career they become certified in ID9, and there's 10 certification courses. So what grew out of this really simple little question, like how do you do what you do, where I really had no idea, is now a thing that is global and recognized as the industry certificate.
Wow. In many ways, I think it's that meta concept of learning how to learn, right? How do you design those processes and systems? So this is one of my favorite questions to ask any person who has some sort of expertise in their field. And so, Catherine, what do organizations, execs, and people who build L&D processes and systems for their organizations, what do they consistently get wrong about L&D?
They get a lot of things wrong because of fairly fundamental issues in the organization. The first thing is to question what is the value of learning in the organization. Now, when you ask that question of a HR director, of a people manager, of an L&D team, of a C-suite executive, they give you some kind of out-of-the-box concept and they say, oh, yes, we believe in it and yada, yada, yada. And they give you the whole, you know, almost like a book has been written. They can recite the paragraph that is kind of okay. Then you scratch the surface of it and you look at how they truly value learning. How do people show up for learning? Do they show up for learning? What's the no-show rate? What's the feeling around learning and development programs that are put on by L&D or HR? And then you start to realize that perhaps there's a disconnect between what these executives say and what the employees are really experiencing. Okay. And the whole thing comes down to something pretty simple. And that is, I have the belief that the learner, the participant, the employee, needs to be at the center of the learning experience. And everything around that learning experience comes from that place where they are the most important thing, being, entity, person in the entire process. And that is really hard to do. Yeah. It's really hard to do because that means that L&D doesn't just say, oh, flavor of the month, let's do leadership training. Or some executive says, oh, we need to be doing more on sales training, or we need to be doing this. That's got nothing to do with what the employee needs. Coming from it from a different angle to say, my organization is at this point, we want to go to this point, a different point in the future. How do we get there? What are our gaps with our people? How do we then bring our people on that journey, give them the learning to fill the gap or whatever the gap is it communication, management, leadership, whatever it is, but if learning's a part of it, what do they need now to where we need the organisation to go? That's a whole different organisation. And I see people in organisations doing it really well. But I can tell you that most don't. They just do check the box training. We did our compliance training. We did this. We threw training, or wasn't even really training, it's just stuff at people through an LMS. They did it and there was no result, but we don't care. We got the check in the box and we're okay. That's not learning. So I have a very different angle of learning around the value of it and the meaning of it.
What does this mean? Now, of course, you know, you said keep the employees at the center of this all, which totally makes sense. But what does it mean when you say keep the employee at the center of it? Like, what do the feedback loops look like? What do the communication lines look like for setting this up? And of course, we are assuming the intent is there from the C-suite or the top management to actually do this rather than, like you said, just this being, you know, tick a box sort of a exercise.
The first thing is you mentioned the feedback loop. The thing that L&D or HR or senior leaders don't do is ask people what they want. And just simply asking the simple question, what do you need in order to do your job better, in order to reach our published vision, our published goals, your team key performance indicators, your personal objectives. What do you need us to give you in order to do that? And then stop and listen. And you will get more data than you'll know what to do with. And just by asking really simple questions, adults are smart. And the thing is that adults learn all day, every day. Like, think about how many times a day do you individually go to Google and search for something? We'll go to Wikipedia. What does that mean? What does that word mean? What does that acronym mean? People are learning all the time and they're really good at it, mostly. They could be better, but that's a different topic. But they're pretty good at it. And they learn in this informal way all the time. And they're happy with that, right? We're happy to go to Google. We're happy to search the internet. We know how to do it. But then we get told we need to do a training course and everyone goes, oh, do we really? So what's the disconnect there? And if that training course had the same level of curiosity, motivation, engagement that someone needing to know what something means right now, that's where the whole tables turn. And I get it that there's compliance training, standard operating procedures that you have to go through in organisations and you have to train people. But the bottom line is that something called a read and understand is no more like training than making refrigerators. That's not training. All that is imparting information and someone has just said, yes, I've read it, or just I've got it really. But there's no behaviour change as a result of that. So this whole notion of putting the participant at the centre of the learning is predicated on the fact that the L&D department, HR, senior executives, can put their grown-up pants on and say, if after the training, whatever it is, nothing has changed or very little has changed, in other words, there's no learning application, then no training has happened. And quite frankly, those participants would have been better off being told they could go shopping for the day or whatever, stay home on the couch with Netflix. They would have had a much better day and got a bit of rest and relaxation than going to a training course which resulted in nothing different anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's, if they just did that, that would change the world of training, because there are millions and millions and millions of dollars wasted every year on training that has no impact. And there's even a term for it. It's called scrap training. And it's in surveys by ATD in America, they actually have this term, scrap training. It's like, seriously, do we have scrap finance? Do we have scrap IT? But we've got scrap training. Like, oh my goodness, that's just shocking that there's even a term for something that didn't work, but we're okay with it. Oh, it just, honestly, don't get me on my soapbox. I'll just keep going. Oh, this podcast will never end.
I don't relate exactly with you, but I can understand your frustration with something like this. Like, people are, the organizations are okay with calling it scrap training and just live with it. But you did bring up, you know, it would be better to just let people be home and watch Netflix. And while we are on the topic of home and Netflix and, you know, working from home, I think the way training has been imparted would have changed in the past 18 months or so. So tell us a little bit about that. What does the paradigm look like for virtual L&D? What does that mean in terms of change? Are there any first principles change, or is it, you know, you just take something which was working offline and you have transferred it to online?
That's where the issue really begins, when people just did that. And at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, it basically loads and loads of training programs were just put on hold, shelved, and just said, you know, we've got better things to think about right now, which was fair enough. And then what happened was then learning and development people and HR people, people managers, started to realise that there was this gap in knowledge and it needed to be filled. And so many of them attempted unsuccessfully to just simply pick up their face-to-face training, what they were doing in a training room, in a boardroom, in a meeting room, and just put it onto Zoom or Teams or whatever. And that didn't work, because what basically that looks like with no adjustment to the instructional design is that there's a trainer who's a presenter basically just talking at participants, sometimes with cameras off, no interaction, no nothing. And again, it's that check the box, I did the training. If you don't get it, bad luck, that's your problem. Again, participant wasn't at the centre of the experience. So that was a disaster, and still for many organisations it still is a disaster. And that's what they call virtual training. That's not virtual training. That's someone just simply reading out slide notes, right? So that's not training. So the whole world of virtual learning, I started putting all of our certification courses on and our courses into virtual over 10 years ago. And we've been running all of our certification courses virtually. And prior to that, I was training with my team of trainers, you know, in high heels in front of a training group for thousands of days. And now we have so much greater success. And by success, I mean the application of learning is so much higher virtually than I could ever have achieved in a training room. And now there is no reason for me to ever go back into a training room. And if a client says to me, well, before the pandemic, they would say to me, Catherine, can you come and train? I'll go, well, I can. It'd be lovely to have a little break in your city and you know, go out to dinner and do all of those nice things, but you're not going to get the same results as if I do it virtually. And so this shift is an instructional design shift. It's a mentality shift. It's about taking long training courses and splitting them up into tiny little chunks with bits to do in between. And there's a whole mechanism for doing that. And then when you do that, what happens is engagement goes through the roof, motivation goes through the roof, learning application goes through the roof, and you look back and go, why weren't we always doing it like this? But the flip side of that is that people don't know what to call good virtual training, because there is no name for the difference between good versus rubbish. It's all called virtual. Yeah. So good virtual training bears no resemblance to just a presenter going through a slide deck. Yeah. So it is very, very different, and some organisations are doing it well, but they realise that it is a huge amount of work to transfer something that they were doing in a classroom into the virtual space in order to get these brilliant results. But it absolutely can be done. And we get 100% of our participants is successful in our courses and have proven learning application during the training, not after, during the training. And that's the measure of success, that they've already applied it. By the time they finish the course, they've already applied it.
Interesting. Now, you know, this brings to my mind something of a wave which is happening in the world of learning and education. Is this thing called cohort-based courses. Mm-hmm. And what essentially, you know, what it is helping people do is unlock, like I mentioned even in the beginning, like unlock knowledge from practitioners, which essentially is behind walls as of now. So, of course, me being from a technical background and having worked for tech companies, you know, there are several people who have scaled companies from whatever zero users to millions of users. But all of that knowledge is just stuck in those walls of the company. And maybe, you know, some of their employees know about it. Maybe most of their employees know about it because communication happens internally. But now this knowledge is getting outside of the walls because these people are now doing cohort courses with 30 people cohorts or 50%, 75% cohorts. And that, like, your thoughts on that? And is that how your virtual training is also organized? Because there is this community along with it as well. So you're learning with a set of peers who are essentially aiming for the same outcome from
correct,
the course.
Correct, yeah. I think that style of learning where organizations have really locked up their content and put walls around it, and, you know, if it goes outside the organization, it's just a terrible crime. And now I think with the collaboration, the wave of collaboration that's happening in the world, when we look at learning, and if we can think about communities of practice where everybody is on the same bus striving for the same thing, regardless of who's paying their salary, that is a different world. One of my earliest clients in my business was an Australian pharmaceutical company with their head office in America. And they were doing sales training, and I was helping them with that, writing all their courses for their different pharmaceutical products for sales reps to sell. And they came to me once and said, "We are the training ground of the pharmaceutical industry in Australia." Because what happened is new reps wanted to work for them because their training was so good. But then they realized that they would leave after a certain number of years and they would go to other organizations. And then all of a sudden, those similar training practices would bob up in the other organizations, and the similar knowledge about disease states and so on would be in other organizations. And they were perfectly okay with it. Like, it was very honorable. It was very like Mother Teresa of the world, you know, because they said it's okay that we are like this informal center of excellence, and what we're doing is basically for the greater good. So if you take that apart a little bit and think, okay, well, that was back then, but now the world has changed and we're looking for more collaboration, to start to think about topics that are cross-cultural, perhaps cross-organisational, where there's not that tie with intellectual property, and certainly there's obviously some training that you would just never let out of the walls of your organisation.
Okay,
but those types of things for the greater good is absolutely marvellous, because one of the things is we've got all these subject matter experts everywhere, and if they're willing to share their knowledge, that just makes the world a better place, I think.
Yeah, 100%. That's the non-zero-sum mindset, right?
If
you work on expanding the pool itself, and in many ways, that is the challenge even with engineering, the difference between supply and demand that we are seeing with developers or engineering talent, right? Mm. It's because of the fact that the pool itself is so small.
Mm.
And if you know, the companies don't work together on increasing the pool, it's who they are going to, it's them that they are going to suffer because of it. Because, you know, inflated salaries, ballooning salaries, because we're all hiring from the small pool.
Exactly. And people are smart. Like, we will run, let's say we're running a ID9 intelligent design certification. So we'll run those as public courses. Now, we will have people coming on those courses that are direct competitors, but they're smart enough to know that. And yet they can still work in groups. They're not giving away their trade secrets. They're not giving away anything, because they're smart adults. People know. And if they're smart enough to do an ID9 certification, they're certainly smart enough to realise that in my working group where I'm working on a project or something is a competitor, and I know what to say and what I don't, but we're all in it together on the same learning journey. So I think this next generation of learners, when I compare it to myself where everyone was completely tied up and bent out of shape if anything like that happened, I think this next generation of learners just go, well, we all need to learn this. Let's do it together, you know, and then it is for the greater good. And then we'll know when to say things and when not to say things about what is potentially intellectual property issues and so on. Yeah. I'd like to think that's the case anyway.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We are going to see more and more collaboration going forward. Catherine, you're yourself a fantastic learner, and I saw on your LinkedIn that you have written, 31 books?
31, yeah.
Yeah, 31 books. And your newest book, Unlock Inner Genius, is out. Is it out already or is it coming?
It was out, yeah, September the 1st it came out. So it's brand new, yeah.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about that. What can listeners take out of this book?
So I was really challenged because I've worked with learning and development my whole career and in large organisations. And so for most of the Fortune 100 companies I've worked with or for, and I've really been in that very large corporate end of the world. And yet what I see is that there's such a struggle with learning across the board. And so my challenge was to say, how do I take this very corporate view of learning and to implement in a very easy to understand way, whether you're a parent with a teenager, how do you help them to learn, whether you're a sports coach, whether you're in business for yourself, an entrepreneur, or whether you're a team member in a business, whether you're a volunteer for a group, you know, at a church group or something. How can I package up what I know about the way people learn for everybody? So that was really my challenge. And so out of that came Unlock Inner Genius. And it's a two-part story, really. The first one is to discover your learning preference. And we as an entire world, we are taught how to read, we're taught how to write, we're taught how to listen even, we're taught how to speak, but we're never really taught how to learn.
Yeah.
And that does my head in. And so the first thing is to realise is that we all have this unique learning preference and our combination is as unique to us as our irises in our eyes and our thumbprints. They're just unique. And yet there are some commonalities. And so I created 12 archetypes of learning and you do an online quiz, which we launched as well. So you do the online quiz and you find out what your learning archetype is and that creates your learning preference. And then comes the realization that, hang on, my whole team at work did this or my family did it and we're all different. And then you kind of sit back and go, oh, perhaps that's why communication has been breaking down. Perhaps that's why when I'm talking in a meeting or maybe talking to my teenager, I'm speaking like a different language. And so then the next part of the book is around saying, how do I communicate not necessarily in the way I learn, but how can I communicate to other people in the way they learn? So how do I twist my language to meet that other, the listener's learning preference? How do I do that? Or if I'm writing a report or an email to a group of people, how do I communicate in such a way that it's balanced for everyone, that I'm not just speaking my language and I think I'm perfectly clear, but then other people are sitting back going, I have no idea what she's talking about. So that's what Unlock Inner Genius is all about. So, and it was really interesting because I put the book out for review and, you know, you kind of hold your breath. As an author, you go, I hope this is all right, because I think these 52,000 words are brilliant, but it's not until you give it to other people. And people came back with the most broad range of reactions to this book, from I can't wait to give this to everybody in my organisation, we're going to do it as teams and da-da-da-da-da, right through to I'm a parent and I now understand why my teenagers won't get off the couch when I want them to do homework, to one person said, you have fixed my relationship of 18 years because my husband is a completely opposite archetype to me. And I now feel I can talk to him in his language and he is going to talk to me in my language. And I thought, I'm fixing marriages. Like, that was never on my agenda, or kids on the couch. And it's just been remarkable, this upswell of parents saying, I need this for my 15-year-old. I need this for my 12-year-old. I need this for my child who's about to go from high school into university or college. And it's been great. So it's early, early days, but it's been fabulous.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, like we discussed, you know, no one teaches in school how to learn. And of course, everyone has a different way of learning, like you mentioned. Catherine, if I want to find out my learning archetype, where should I go?
Go to innergeniusnow.com, and you can take the assessment there. And then you can also get the book, and I'll give you the link to put into the show notes of the podcast. So you can get the ebook, and it's on Amazon all around the world and every other bookseller. So, yeah, it's really an easy read, and it's in very everyday language. So, yeah, tell me what your archetype is once you've done it.
I will. Fantastic. We'll put the links in the show notes, definitely. Catherine, if people want to reach out to you, connect with you, or read more from you, is there a website that they can go to?
Yes, by all means, either go to innergeniusnow.com or to id9intelligentdesign.com, or just go to my LinkedIn and send me a message there or connect with me there. And I'm really active on LinkedIn, so, and I love it when people reach out to me on LinkedIn. So by all means, just contact me and we'll have a chat.
Fantastic. I will myself, of course, figure out my learning archetype and send it to you on LinkedIn. And I hope some of the listeners will also try it out and connect with you over on LinkedIn. Catherine, thank you so much for coming on the Shape of Work podcast. I really appreciate you taking time out for this and sharing your valuable experiences. Pretty sure, you know, some of the things I even picked up, and L&D practitioners will, of course, get a lot of value out of the conversation.
Great. Thanks very much for having me.